Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking to Catherine. Catherine is one of our clinical nurse specialists here at Breast Cancer Now, and she primarily works with secondary breast cancer patients. To recognise International Nurses Day, we'll be speaking about the nursing side of breast cancer, as well as Catherine's personal experience of her role. Catherine, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
To kick off our conversation, I just want to ask what led you to becoming a breast cancer clinical specialist nurse?
Okay. So I first got interested in nursing, just generally, when I was probably in my teenage years. My brother's girlfriend, now my sister-in-law, began her nurse training. And I really was interested when she used to come home and tell, you know, come around and tell us the stories of the types of things that she did and the sorts of patients she came in contact with. And later on in my sort of secondary schooling, I was given the opportunity to be able to undertake a nursing course in those days. So I'm talking a few years ago now. It was a CSE, it was an exam sort of type course. But that led me to be able to do a little bit of work experience on a ward. So that was the cement for me. I really, really enjoyed that experience. And from then on, whatever my teachers said, I didn't really want to go to university. Nursing was still a very practice-based training course, and I didn't want to go to university. All I wanted to do was nurse. So through doing my nurse training, and I actually applied up and down the country from Edinburgh to Bristol and I think everywhere in between, but ended up staying at home in Leeds. So I trained at St James's University Hospital, and there I met my husband. He was the only male student in the group, and he's gone on to join the Royal Air Force and become the senior nurse, the director of nursing there in the past, amongst other things. But it's meant that we've sort of moved around. So after a period of time working as a qualified staff nurse, off we went to sort of explore the world of that the RAF gave us. And it wasn't until we came back from a period of time abroad and having had our children that I came back into nursing sort of properly. And again, my sister-in-law said, why don't you sort of try and go into the private setting? That might help your confidence a little bit. And I did that. And through that, I came into contact with the first sort of breast cancer patients that I'd had contact with for a long, long time. And that really, really struck a chord with me from the point of view of the support that they needed and the support that actually we weren't able to provide within that setting. So that really triggered off my desire to specialise in breast cancer nursing. And I moved to a couple of places where I was working with that set of patients. But eventually I was working part-time at a screening unit up in Guildford, and I had the opportunity to join the then Breast Cancer Care Helpline. And so I did that for a year. And then I became part of the team here on a permanent basis. I've been back to practice since then. So as a clinical nurse specialist in practice, in a hospital, in a breast care unit. But I was drawn back to the charity, really. I really enjoyed the variation. So I've done all sorts of bits and pieces to be able to sort of put towards my status, if you like, of clinical nurse specialist. And as you say, I'm now in the role of clinical nurse specialist for secondary breast cancer here at Breast Cancer Now. I think the other thing that sort of cemented that for me as well was whilst I was in practice, I lost my stepdad. He had a cancer as well, and it was quite a short amount of time between him being diagnosed and him unfortunately dying. But the one person that made the difference to my mum and to him was a nurse I never met. She at the time was really talking to him about palliative care and an end of treatment. And he was really struggling with the fact that he needed treatment because he felt so poorly and didn't really want to contemplate that. And she made that all right. She made that okay to say no to treatment and said, we really need to take the best care. And I think had I known, as I say, I left the charity for a short period of time when I went into practice, had I thought I was going to come back, I would never have thought that I would have come back into this role. you know, as many people do, the scariness of dealing with patients who've got a life-limiting illness is something that they're not quite comfortable with. They don't feel as if they want to, you know, sort of go that bit extra. But it suddenly struck me in a conversation with my mum one day that if I wasn't prepared to do that because this job had come up and I was umming and ahhing as to whether it was the right role for me back within the charity, that if I didn't do that and other people didn't do that, but then my mum and my stepdad would have never had such a positive experience that that nurse gave them. So I sort of pushed my shoulders back and applied for the job. And that's really what really pushed me into the role that I'm in today.
Yeah. What it sounds like to me is then you were motivated, I guess, by the compassion of other people that you saw first from your sister-in-law, and then you saw the effects of that compassion for your mum and your stepdad. So you kind of saw both sides.
Yeah, I think so. That was a real sort of turning point for me. I would, as I say, never have expected that I would have come back into this type of role, but it's actually the best thing I've ever done. And the opportunities and the knowledge that I've managed to sort of gain and been supported through the team here at Breast Cancer Care and then Breast Cancer Now, obviously, since the merger happened, has been absolutely phenomenal. So I've really enjoyed it and continue to enjoy it to this day. I've never regretted doing it.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. And obviously, you've given us, you know, huge span of career all in a nutshell there. So if we kind of go down to the details a bit, what is the day-to-day of a breast care nurse?
So in the NHS, I mean, I think nurses across, you know, the UK in these breast cancer nursing or clinical nurse specialist roles, they're also going to be really varied. I think sometimes that can be a little bit of a difficulty for people because there are different expectations and yet different clinics and different services run in different ways. But many nurses will come into contact, and probably the majority of their patients will be those with primary breast cancer. Mm. So they will be supporting them at diagnosis when they get the news of their breast cancer. They will quite often be supporting them over treatment choices. So particularly in that early stage, it might be surgical choices, so that the patient's been given the choice as to whether they have a lumpectomy or a wide local excision, as we call it, or a mastectomy. And so sort of coordinating that care and really bringing things together, giving information, giving support to help people with their decision making. So lots of support, lots of information, as I say. And, you know, they will be present in lots of clinics, whether that's with the surgeons, with the oncologists. They might have clinics of their own so that they can talk through things with their patients, back up the information that they've been given by the doctor in the treatment team, and those sorts of things. And there is an awful lot of use of what we call the holistic needs assessments these days. Everybody's supposed to have this assessment done to be able to prioritise what are their needs. And sometimes, you know, when they're done, you might automatically assume that the priority is something. It is, I need to get on with treatment and, you know, and survivorship is my main priority. But, you know, sometimes there are things that take you by surprise and there are other things that people have got priorities over, you know, step by step. It might be I live alone, but I've got a couple of dogs or cats at home and my priority is them actually at the moment. What do I do to get them sorted out so I can move on and make decisions? So there are all sorts of things that nurses will come across to be able to try and help sort out, signpost to other places and that sort of thing. So that's a bit of a generalisation of what those nurses do in clinics and what they do with patients. But they will build relationships as well, hopefully, with those patients. You know, time is absolutely at a premium. We all know that, I think, in the NHS. So that does make it sometimes difficult.
Yeah.
But the building of trust and that relationship can help all of that information and support, hopefully, you know, be given to that patient and help them on their way through their treatment and beyond that as well.
So it sounds to me almost that the nursing role is kind of that bridge between the medical and the personal, and you're there to kind of walk people across in that sense.
Mm.
And I guess that must sort of translate into your days now at Breast Cancer Now. So would you mind telling us what you're doing with the charity and how that role might compare to roles you've had previously?
Sure. Well, I definitely give that information and support, but what any of us who are working in the nursing team here at Breast Cancer Now are, you know, doing. It's not placed in clinical practice, so it's not in a hospital. And I think quite a lot of people that come into contact with us still assume that we are based in a hospital or that we are part based in a hospital. The permanent team here at Breast Cancer Now are Breast Cancer Now's nurses, but we have a lot of sessional nurses who work on our helpline, and we'll perhaps talk about that a little bit later. So it's quite different in what I do, but the fundamentals are the same, I would say. Work in an office, or should I say at home at the moment. So yeah. I think we're month 15 of working at home. And the day is really very varied. And I still come into contact with those people, but I do it via phone, via email, or maybe through some of the services that we as a charity provide for those who have had a diagnosis of breast cancer, whether that's primary breast cancer or secondary metastatic breast cancer. So incurable breast cancer. So really varied. So I contribute to events, work on the helpline, do my bit each week on the helpline, do my bit on the Ask Our Nurses email service. But I also help produce and write information. So a lot of the information that people can find on the website that's to do with secondary breast cancer, I've reviewed, updated, or authored on there. And that goes through a really rigorous process. So it takes quite some time for us to be able to do that. But it means we can give trusted, accurate, and up-to-date information. I answer press queries. So if you've got anything coming in from the press, I work with the press team to be able to give comments and views on maybe things that are going out into the press. And most recently, I would say, from the nursing team perspective, sort of real accomplishment, we feel really accomplished about this, is the Facebook and Instagram lives that we've been able to do on a quite frequent basis, and particularly during that first part of the pandemic as well. We've been doing them before, but we really try to getting to engage with people through social media in a live medium, if you like, and choose a topic, and people can quite often send us questions in ahead, or some of us are able to be able to answer questions in a live sense as well. So that does allow us to connect with a different type of audience. So, yeah, incredibly varied. Policy and campaigns quite often come to me and ask my thoughts about particular things. We're doing a huge amount of campaigning on behalf of those with secondary breast cancer. So there's not really a team that I don't necessarily get involved with on a yearly basis. I quite often get involved with most of the teams across the organisation in one way or another, small or big, on an annual basis. But on a day-to-day basis, my day definitely is in contact with those that are our service users, but does look quite different to, you know, wearing a uniform and being in the clinic in the NHS, for sure.
You really are all over the charity, aren't you? And I know, speaking as someone who doesn't work on the nursing team directly, we rely on you nurses to come in, like you say, come and have a look at the rest of our work and make sure we're putting out reliable information, useful information, and we've also stolen you for our podcast, so thank you for that. You really are.
I'll add that to the list of things that I can say that I do in my role.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think that's important for everybody to know that we're there, because it is important that the whole of the organisation, you know, are trusted. And we really want people to come to us and ultimately to our services, to our information, because that's how we can best support them. But there's a huge amount that goes on in the organisation behind that, not least things like fundraising, recording podcasts, doing all sorts of things in order to get our face out there and let people know that we're there. It's really not unusual for us to come across people who said, I never realised you were there. I wish I'd found you before. So, you know, that's what drives us on, I think, to be able to think of all those ways that we can engage with people and let people know that we're there for them.
Of course. And I think over this last year, that's been especially needed. Have you noticed any of the major differences in the sort of questions that you're being asked when people do call up the helpline? Perhaps they're starting to present with slightly different problems than you were encountering before. Could you speak on that a little bit?
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, in the last year, calls have definitely reflected what's been happening to all of us. And, you know, COVID's impact on the diagnosis and treatment of, and care for those with a breast cancer diagnosis as well. I would say that I think we all feel that having been able to successfully work at home and set the helpline up and the Ask Our Nurses email service, which are our sort of base services, if you like, has been absolutely monumental. We talked about it for such a long time before the pandemic, came along, and then in a very short space of time, we've got it sorted out and got it implemented, and it has worked and worked really, really well. So, that has been a real accomplishment as well. But I mean, before, I'm not saying that these things have gone away, but before the pandemic came along, we would often have people that rung us up or emailed us about symptoms, about breast screening. Maybe they'd just been diagnosed and wanted to talk about that, about choice of surgery, as I mentioned before. Breast reconstruction is a really big thing and quite a complex conversation to have. So, we often talk to people about those sorts of things, or management of side effects of treatment. And so those things didn't necessarily go away, but what really happened was that we slowly started to get calls and emails about, COVID coming into our lives. Mm. And I've had treatment 3 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or 6 months ago. And what does that mean for me about my risk of catching COVID? Am I more at risk? So we sort of had a steady trickle. And then, of course, along came 23rd of March, when the Prime Minister said we had to stay at home. And we were able to publish some information on the website, very common questions that started to come up on the helpline. And whoosh, there was this floodgate opened for a lot of people who were all very worried about treatment, worried about whether their treatment would stop, particularly those with secondary breast cancer, because they're continually on treatment. Those sorts of things. So a lot of things changed and have continued to change or wax and wane in actual fact all the way through the year, depending on what's been going on. There were certainly a lot of people who were very worried and very upset about some of the decisions that they and the teams that they were working with, that were looking after them, were almost, if I say forced, I don't mean they're forced to hand it. It was the best and safest way to sort of go forward, but they weren't probably what they were expecting or could have expected outside of the pandemic, as it were. So the calls, sort of went up and then they sort of slowed down again. But I would say that numbers don't always reflect what's happening on the helpline. We might see that one day we've had less calls than another, but sometimes that means that they've been less calls, but they've just been longer and more complex. And it's certainly in the time that I've been working on the helpline, then things have changed. Treatments change. Treatment choices are really complex these days. So long conversations with people just about helping them and empowering them to sort of think about the decisions and the choices that they've been given, and helping them with some emotional support as well, which is what we always say, that we provide that type of support as well. And emotionally, I think an awful lot of people were, impacted by the pandemic. And then, of course, we had the vaccine come along, and people have been wondering about whether it's safe to have that. And then we've had the stories about the blood clots. So there's been a real sort of peaks and troughs, really, with the amount of questions. But certainly lots of things about treatment, about stopping treatment or pausing treatment, lots of worries about that. So a definite change in the last year.
Yeah, I suppose there's already this kind of persistent feeling of just health anxiety, whether you have an existing health condition or not. But when you do, like you say, you're going through constant treatment if you have secondary, or approaching a short amount of treatment for primary, it's just compounded by what's going on in the world.
It's a really important point that you make there, actually, thinking about the fact that there are other health conditions that have got absolutely, no regard for the fact that there's a pandemic going on. So one of the things I didn't mention is that we had quite a lot of people ring us saying, do you think I should report a symptom? Do you think I should go to the GP or contact the GP? There was certainly a reticence and hesitance of a lot of people wanting to report symptoms, whether that was a breast change, whether that was somebody that had already had a primary breast cancer and maybe they've got a pain or some sort of symptom that might suggest that they developed secondary breast cancer. All of those things, you know, still had to carry on and might have been managed or run a little bit differently. But I think, you know, it was still important for us to be able to say to people, you still need to continue to report those symptoms. Health conditions are not going to go away because the pandemic is with us. So we did a lot of encouraging people to do that.
Yeah, I think that's really important to mention. And everything that you've said thus far, I hope has been really encouraging for anyone who is listening that has these anxieties or has any questions about an existing diagnosis. And I know this is quite a big question to ask, but is there any kind of comfort that you might be able to offer to someone who is listening, who might be debating calling the helpline? What's something that you would say to those people if they're experiencing any worries like the ones we've mentioned?
I think I would simply say that, you know, we have the time. Well, however busy we are, we've always got the time to care. So if you're unsure about whether you need to report a symptom, give us a call and let us talk that through with you. You know, the vast majority of times we're going to say to you, if it's new and it's different, then really it ought to be reported to your GP. Some people have tried to do that and feel as if their GP's not listened to them. So we will talk around ways of how they might go about going back to their GP, seeing somebody different, that type of thing. So it's certainly very open to anybody in that sort of situation. But certainly also those who are facing a diagnosis, maybe they're waiting for tests, maybe they're newly diagnosed, that time, that listening ear, that real non-judgmental sort of way of listening, signposting, and thinking together out loud. I think quite often people have thought through things in their own head, but it's a lot easier to do that when you talk it through with somebody, even if actually ultimately the decision or what you notice isn't changed, you don't get anything particularly different. It can be really helpful to sort of think things through aloud with somebody else. So I think, you know, to answer the question, we might not always have the answers to a specific question that people have asked us, but I think we can talk around that subject. But I would certainly encourage anybody that's affected by breast cancer, whether that's because they're worried about their risk, they've found a symptom, or beyond that they've been diagnosed, is that time is what we have, and it's very, very much a luxury for us compared to our peers that are working in the NHS. So we're no replacement for those teams. Those teams know their patients inside out, they have medical notes, they have all those details. But I think, if you like, we're a great accompaniment to those, and people can take their time to explain to us, and we can take time with them to help support. And the amount of repeat callers that we have that come back to us time and time again, I think is testimony to the fact that people do appreciate that, and that we can work in tandem with their teams. It's not a case of us or them, it's working together for the best for the person that's calling us for that patient. Time, we have it.
Thank you. We will signpost the helpline at the end of this podcast, and also provide a few more details for how you can get in touch if anyone listening does want to get in touch. But before we get there, just a bit more about your role. What's something that people might not know or realise about the role of a breast care nurse?
Oh, gosh. I think probably that, you know, the vast majority of breast cancer nurses have got an awful lot of experience. They may come into the role, you know, from a different place. So maybe they've been working on a chemotherapy or an oncology ward. So it takes time to learn your skill, to learn the information and the knowledge to become a clinical nurse specialist. And that can be done through, you know, sort of study, if you like. But I don't think there's any replacement for learning on the job, if you like, I suppose. Experiential learning, I think academics might call that. It's something that I always really valued. And I am so happy that was the way that my training was, you know, was arranged in all those days, in all those years ago, because it actually suited me as an individual. And I think, you know, we have different sort of learning styles. So, you know, as you're going along, you certainly learn from practice. There was no better way for me to be able to do that. But in addition to that, actually, every nurse, cancer nurse, breast cancer nurse, whoever it is, has got to do something that's called revalidation. And I don't know whether people do appreciate that or not. So every 3 years, we're expected to prove our worth, prove what we've been doing, that we've done continuous professional development, that we've had some feedback from patients or from our peers that say that we are doing a job that, you know, and we're doing it well and correctly, and we can reflect, we can be reflective practitioners as well. That takes time to do. And, you know, the job of cancer nurses, the job of all nurses, but the job of cancer nurses is tough enough. And then when the pandemic came along, I think that made things tougher as well, getting this, you know, sort of study and those sorts of things done. So we're here to be able to provide that as well. At Breast Cancer Now, we do support some of those healthcare professionals. So I guess there'd be quite a lot behind the scenes that people wouldn't appreciate. They often see nurses as being really busy, but maybe they don't understand the whole entirety of that why they're busy, and, you know, what that entails, yeah. Type thing. And also, you know, in the last year, but you know, previous to that as well, particularly the people that I work with and the nurses that I've got to know through Breast Cancer Now, who are working with secondary breast cancer patients, it does have an emotional toll on the nurses themselves as well. You know, I think it couldn't fail to have that. And it's the same with us here at the charity, but we don't necessarily develop relationships with patients that makes that even more significant or even more difficult when they're faced with a huge amount of sadness of young people with a diagnosis of secondary breast cancer, young families, all sorts of situations. You know, it to coin the phrase, it's always been a tough job, but, you know, the pandemic has definitely made that tougher. So quite a few things, probably looking at that nurse that you see in the clinic and are in front of, there are plenty of things I'm sure that people don't realise that they need to do in order to continue and be allowed to practice in the way that they do.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for going into that kind of detail, because as you were talking about that, I realised, at least for myself and maybe for a lot of other people, a lot of the contact that we have with medical professionals, we're normally not in a good place when we encounter that. You know, we're going into a hospital because something is wrong. Mm. So we're always encountering medical professionals in this kind of high stress environment. And it's very much you're thinking of your own personal experience and not everything that's going on behind the scenes. So that's actually is really helpful for me. And I hope people listening that you've explained a bit more about that.
Yeah.
And of course, with all these things going on, with all these challenges and all this constant learning and developing that you're doing, there's a lot going on. But what is your favourite part of your job?
I think everything that I've said so far is my favourite part. It's so difficult to be able to put your finger on one thing. I mean, I only briefly sort of mentioned the fact that we support healthcare professionals. And I really feel since I came into this job that I've had an awful lot more contact with healthcare professionals on behalf of the charity. We have what we call a nursing network. So that is a free membership for anybody, any nurse, a breast cancer nurse, breast care nurse, clinical nurse specialist to join. And although, you know, resources have waxed and waned over the years, we've been able to provide some level of support through educational means for nurses, and we're just starting to sort of build that back up again through some webinars, free webinars for nurses. But we've got a subsection of that nursing network who are in a group called the Secondary Breast Cancer Nursing Group, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know a lot of them reasonably well as sort of knowing everybody else that's out there in that network. And they are truly incredible individuals. I have met some of these most wonderful of nurses through that, and they keep my feet on the ground and they keep my head from being in the clouds. They keep my head level and also are able to help us out at the charity here to be able to provide the support and information that we do through our services and through our information sort of production. As I said, there's a rigorous process, and part of that process is sending the information we've written out to people in practice saying, does this work for you? Is this right? Is this what you would give for your patients? So we need those people, and getting to know them has been an absolute true you know, privilege of that. So I think that's one of my favourites that I've really got, you know, been drawn to, and particularly in the last year when it's been so difficult for them all. But they've all kept themselves sort of, you know, going. And you know, I hope they're terribly proud of what they've done, because I'm really proud to be involved with them.
Wonderful, thank you. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on here?
You know, the helpline really is the gateway to what we can provide support and information wise as a charity. Whether it be, you know, attending services, you know, some of our services face to face, hopefully again in the future, or online. You know, we've not really touched on services, but a lot of our services have been able to move online in the past. In the past year, it's taken a little bit of time with some of them, but we've done that, and we hope to be able to continue with some of those services online. But if you're unsure about what we can provide, what support, what information, we've got an absolute huge catalogue of information. We've got a good range of supportive services. Might not meet everybody's needs, but there's a really good choice there. So if you're unsure, trust us, pick up the phone and give us a ring on the helpline. I do appreciate, we all appreciate that sometimes picking up the phone to speak to a stranger, relative stranger, about something so intimate and so, you know, difficult can be, you know, just the scariest thing ever. But we let everybody take their time and are very led by the caller. So I'd encourage anybody to ring the helpline. And if you really don't feel that that's something that you want to do, then you can always drop us an email and you can always ask us if we'll ring you. If you want us to take the first step to make that call, then we're perfectly willing to do that as well. Our helpline is here for you. Remember, I said we had the time and we've got space for you to be able to talk about what you need to talk about confidentially, and all of the calls are free as well.
And with that, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Catherine.
Thanks very much, Em.
If you would like to speak to one of our helpline team about a diagnosis of breast cancer or any symptoms or worries you may have, you can call our helpline on 0808 800 6000. You can also get in touch with our nurses via our website or by emailing nurse@breastcancernow.org. To support Catherine and all the other amazing nurses that work with us here at Breast Cancer Now, please consider setting up a sponsorship via breastcancernow.org/sponsor-a-nurse. Your donations will help us to continue providing vital support and care to people who need it. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.